The Christian Complete Armor by William Grinnell. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 17b. And the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God. Chapter 28. How the Christian may use the sword of the word for his defense in any affliction and a direction towards it. I come now to give you some little help by way of direction. How the Christian may use this sword of the word for his defense against the last enemy, but not the least. And this is an army made up of many bands of afflictions, which from without invade and within distress him. The Christian in this world stands not, as you may see some houses, so fenced and shadowed with hills or woods, that the wind beats but upon one side of them. No, he lies open to storms and tempests from all quarters. We read of a strange kind of wind that at once smote the four corners of the house in which Job's children were. Truly, thus the Christian's afflictions beset him round, no corner left unassaulted, and very often he is smitten on all sides at once, crossed in his estate, feeble in his body, and afflicted in his spirit. And when so many seas of sorrows meet, it is not easy work for the poor Christian's heart to stand unbroken amidst the concurrent violency of their waves. Though this is certain, that those dejections and perturbations with which the minds of the best saints are so discomposed and ruffled, yea, sometimes dismayed and distressed, cannot be charged upon any deficiency of the gospel's principles for this support and comfort, but rather on their own impotency and unskillfulness to apply them in their several existency. My present task is to drop a few words of counsel to the weak Christian, how he may use this sword of the word for his defense and comfort in any affliction without or distress of spirit from within that may assault him. Here I must not descend to particular cases. There were a voluminous work and not so proper for this place, but content myself with some general rule that may be applicable to all. Now the cordial and restorative part of the word, which principally is prepared and provided for the soul's comfort in all its discomforts and distresses, is contained in the promises. These, well studied and improved, can alone make thee a comfortable Christian. Now, if thou wouldest improve the promises so as not to be trampled upon by Satan in any distress that comes upon thee, but comfortably lift up thy head in hope and confidence above the waves of thy present sorrow, then hearken to what follows. First, let it be thy chief care to have thy interest in and right to the promises cleared up. This is the hinge on which the great dispute between thee and Satan will move in the day of trouble. Oh, it is sad for a poor Christian to stand at the door of the promise in the dark night of affliction, afraid to draw the latch, whereas he should then come as boldly for shelter as a child into his father's house. Come, my people, enter thou into thy chambers, and shut thy doors about thee. Hide thyself, as it were, for a little moment, until the indignation be overpassed. Isaiah chapter 26, verse 20. He that hath his title to the promise, proved the word to his own conscience, will not be wrangled easily out of his comfort. Nabal would not part with his inheritance for the pleasure or displeasure of a king, but stands up in defense of his right even unto death. And so resolves Job, till I die, I will not remove my integrity from me. Job chapter 27, verse 5. This was his evidence for heaven, and therefore Satan used his best wits to make him throw it up, but never could effect it. His title was clear, and he will not be disputed out of it by Satan, no, nor afraid to vouch it before God himself, when God, in his providence, seemed to have disowned him and to handle him as his enemy. Thou knowest that I am not wicked. Job 10:7. He saith not that he hath no sin, but in a humble appeal to God, defends his state that he is not wicked. And this kept the chariot of his hope on its wheels all along his sad sufferings, so that it was never quite overthrown, though sometimes it seemed to tatter. Section 1. But how shall I know whether I have a right to the promises? First, inquire whether thou art united to Christ by faith or no. The promises are not a common for swine to rout in, but Christ's sheep walk for his flock to feed in. If ye be Christ, then ye are Abraham's seed, and heirs according to the promise, Galatians 3:29. The promise is the jointure and cannot be had but by taking the person of Christ in marriage, and faith in is the grace by which the soul keeps its consent to take Christ as he is held up in the gospel called, therefore, a receiving of Christ. There is no doubt but that thou hast often been wooed in the ministry of the word by Christ's spokesman, and that question hath been put to thee for Christ, which was once put to Rebecca concerning her taking Isaac to husband. Wilt thou go with this man? They have from the word set him forth in his glories before thee, who he is and what he brings. Thou hast heard the articles upon which he is most willing to proceed to marriage, and take thee as his beloved into his bed and bosom, as, first, that thou send away all other lovers which have had any pretensions to thee, for he will endure no competitor with him in thy affections. The name of Balaam must be taken out of Israel's mouth, and then God marries himself to her. Hosea 2:17-18. Secondly, that thou like his law as well as his love. Christ will not be husband where he will not be master. Thirdly, that thou take him for better and for worse, with his cross as well as his crown, to suffer for him, as well as to reign with him. Now, what entertainment has this found with thee? Dost thou, upon the discovery made of Christ, take liking in his person? Is he transcendently amiable in thy eye and precious to thy soul, so as to inflame thee with an insatiable desire of him? Canst thou freely pack away thy once daring lust for him, and leap out of the arms of all thy carnal delights and sinful pleasure to be taken into his embraces? Art thou as willing as should be thy Lord as thy love, and as content to bow to his scepter as lie in his bosom? In a word, art thou so enamored with him that thou now canst not live without him, nor enjoy thyself except thou mayest enjoy him? Thy heart is wounded with the darts with which his love and loveliness have shot into it, and he himself carries the balm about him, which alone can heal it. Let now him now require what he will at thy hands. Nothing he commands shall be denied. If he bids thee leave father and father's house, thou wilt go after him, though it be to the other ends of the world. If he tells thee thou must be mean and poor in the world for his sake, thou art resolved to beg with him rather than reign without him, yea, die for him, than live without him. Come forth, thou blessed of the Lord, and put on the bracelet of thy promises. They are the love tokens which I am to deliver in his name to thee. Thou art the happy soul that Christ betrothed to himself. Languish no longer in thy unbelieving fears for thy comfort. No, it's not Christ's custom to entangle souls' affections, and when he has got their love, then to deny his to them and cast them off. Section 2. Inquire what effect the promises have upon the soul. All who have a right to the promise are transformed by the promise. Has Satan shed his vehement seed into the heart of Eve by a promise, Genesis 3:4, ye shall not surely die, whereupon she presently conceived with sin and was assimilated with the likeness of his diabolical nature, wicked as the devil himself. So God uses the promises of the gospel, called therefore the immortal seed, to beget his own image and likeness in the hearts of his elect, 2 Peter 1:4. Exceeding great and precious promises, that by these ye might be partakers of the divine nature, that is, be partakers of such heavenly holy qualities and dispositions as will make you like God himself. The promises of the gospel have in them a fitness, and when by the Spirit of God applied, a virtue to purify the heart as well as pacify the conscience. Now ye are clean, saith Christ to his disciple, through the word which I have spoken to you, John 15:3. Lay therefore thy hand upon thy heart and speak freely. Have the promises had a sanctifying, transforming virtue upon thee? What of God doth not thou find in thy heart more since thy acquaintancy with the promises than before? Some use promises as a protection for sin, rather than an argument against it. As sin takes occasion by the commandment to work in the carnal heart all manner of concupiscence, so many are the promise embroidered to sin more freely, like Montblancs which drink poison in confidence of their antidote. Now, which way works the promise upon the heart? If this seal of the promise leaves not the impression of God's image on thee, it ratifies no good to thee. If it produces no holiness in thee, it brings no joy to thee. In a word, if the promise be not to thee a seed of grace, it is no evidence for glory. But if thou canst find it leaves the superscription of God upon thee, then it assures the love and favor of God to thee. Section 3. Inquire in what posture thy heart stands to the word of command. The promise may be is sweet to thy palate. This thou rollest like a lump of sugar under thy tongue, but are not thy teeth set against the command, as if it were gall and wormwood. Thou smilest on the promise, but when put in mind of thy duty to this command, thou countenances change, and a frown sets on thy brow, as if God had some austere master that breaks his servants' backs with heavy burdens. And thou couldst wish with all thy heart that a dispensation might be procured for thee, to break now and then a command without forfeiting thy claim to the promise, but because that is not to be hoped for, thou art so kind to thyself as to give thyself leave to bow down to some idol of pleasure or profit that thou hast set up in thy heart, and hopest God will be merciful to thee, because it is only in this or that one way thou makest bold with him in. If this shoe fit thy foot, this be the true character of thy heart, which God forbid. Thou hast no lot which belongs to thee in the lap of the promise. We have a comfortable promise, Psalms 50:15. But a guard is set about it, that no disobedient wrench should gather its sweet fruit, verses 16 and 17. But unto the wicked God saith, what hast thou to do to declare my statutes, or that thou shouldest take my covenant into thy mouth, seeing thou hatest instruction and castest my word behind thee? On the other hand, if thou canst in truth say, that is not the holy command which art offended with, but with thyself, because thou canst not obey it perfectly, that it is not grievous for thee to keep, but to break the laws of God, and thou thy foot too often slips, yet thy heart cleaves to them, and will not let thee lie where thou fallest, but up thou gettest to mend thy pace, and make thy steps better. Known, poor soul, this sincere respect thou hast to the command, in a most comfortable evidence for thy truth title to the promise. When David was able to vouch his love to the command, he did not question his title to the promise. Psalms 119:113. There he asserts his sincere affection to the precepts. I hate vain thoughts, but thy laws do I love. Mark, he does not say he is free from vain thoughts, but he hates them. He likes their company no better than a pack of thieves that break into his house. Neither saith he that he will fully keep the law, but he loved the law even when he failed of exact obedience to it. Now, from this testimony which his conscience brought in for his love to the law, his faith acts clearly and strongly on the promise in the next words, thou art my hiding place and my shield, I hope in thy word. Verse 114. Section 4. If thou questionest thy right to one promise, inquire whether thou canst not discern thy interest in the second, which, if thou canst, thou mayest conclude, thou hast a right to the other, though thou didst doubt of it, yea, and to all the rest. For as there is a concatenation of graces, he that finds one hath all, so of promises, he that is heir to one hath a right to all. Maybe when thou readest that promise, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Matthew chapter 5, verse 8. The remainder of the corruption, being not yet fully mortified in thy heart, prevents thee from applying it to thyself as thy portion. But as for that, verse 6, blessed are they which hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Happily thou feelest such a pinching sense of thy guilt and want of holiness that will enforce thee to acknowledge that if ever man in a burning fever thirsteth for drink, or one half starved desireth food, then thou dost crave and cry for the righteousness of Christ, to justify thy person and grace from Christ, to sanctify thy nature, so that thou canst not but see this promise spoken to thee. And if this belongs to thee, even the former and all the other with it, for they are branches in the same covenant, which God does not dismember, but gives it entire, with all the branches growing on it to the believer's portion. Hence it is they are called heirs of the promise. Not heirs of this promise or that, but of promise. That is, of the covenant which comprehends all the promises of the gospel, so that, as he hath hold of the man's whole body, that hath fast hold of his hand, though it be but one member of it, because it is knit to the rest, and by it he may draw the rest to him. So if thou hast hold of any one promise, thou hast hold of all. And as one may draw out the wine of a whole hogshead at one tap, so may a poor soul derive the comfort of the whole covenant to himself through one promise which he is able to apply. We know, saith John, that we have passed from death unto life, because we love the brethren. 1 John 3:14. Eternal life is the cream and top of all covenant blessings. Now, a poor Christian may, upon the inward feeling of this one grace of love in his heart, being the condition annexed to this promise, know that he is in a state of life and happiness. And why? Because wherever this grace is in truth, there are all other saving graces. Christ is not divided in these, and consequently he can apply this promise, and hath the right to all. End of chapter 28.